Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Men in Blazers ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today. Whether it's a midweek game on the continent or a big weekend clash, cash in with your soccer knowledge on Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app. Download the app today. Use code MIB for a first deposit match of up to $100. This episode is sponsored by Audible, the home of storytelling. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalogue. Audible is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment with highly anticipated new releases. I'm currently listening to The Secret Hours by Mick Herron. That's the standalone prequel to the majestic Slow Horses television series. I can't stop listening. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/courage or text courage to 500 500. That's audible.com/courage or text courage to 500 500.
This is Rebecca Lowe, or Rebecca Lua if you listen to Suboptimal Radio, and you are listening to Men in Blazers on the NBC Sports Network.
It's unbelievable.
Rodgy.
Oh, hello, gorgeous.
From the Embassy Row Studio.
Like Arsenal Football Club.
Yeah, in the Carabao.
Budweiser.
From the Embassy Row Studios in the crap part of Bedford. I'm from the crap part of the South Fork of Long Island. It's the Men in Blazers Spotify Green Room.
Oh, mate. It's so good to be back, Devo. Oh, the Carabao Cup special. We may talk a little bit of transfer action.
Yeah, absolutely. We're not just back, Rog. We are back on Spotify Green Room.
And like Harry Kane, we're not leaving anytime soon.
This summer. That is right. We'll be here every Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern time throughout the season doing live pods in which you, dear GFOPs, can participate. For those of you on Green Room with us right now, live, you already know the drill. Ask those questions in the chat section. We'll take the best ones later in the show. For those of you listening on your pod radios later, that's why you should join us here on Spotify Green Room. Joining live is the only way to actually participate in the pod.
We did get a wonderful question, very thought-provoking, from at Jackie Mannion via social today for the Green Room. Jackie wanted to know, who does better this season, Arsenal or Everton, being that they're like the same club? And if you were here, Jackie Mannion, you can ask that question live. Remind us, Dave, how do people join?
Just download the Spotify Green Room app. Search Men in Blazers in people, not groups, because we are people, we are not a group. And then give us a follow. Can you kick this whole thing off with a toast, Rogelio?
Yeah, if I get a couple of emeralds, I'll make a toast. I work for emeralds, Dave. You beat me 4-2 in the. Oh, I've just scored a blinder, 4-3. Equalised. Let's get this one going. Dave, I'm going to open. Let me have a little swig. My first third bud of the day. Oh, to the memory of Jordan Shaqiri. Yeah! Who left Liverpool. I can't believe how sad I am. You know, sometimes someone, you know, like Charlie Watt is there one day and not the other, and you just hit by like a ton of bricks. I've not thought about Charlie Watt for a long time, and then suddenly he passes and I'm devastated. I feel the same about Jord. Not passed on, but moved to Lyon this week. I love Jord.
Lyon.
You know, when it comes to hair miracles, Sherd is essentially Swiss Brian Urlacher. But I love most about watching Sherd in play for Liverpool especially is that whenever Jurgen Klopp subbed him in late in a game, watching Sherd take the field with a grin on his face, like he was totally self-aware. Yes, I can't believe they're putting me on the field here either. And I want to raise my bud fam, to Sherd. Farewell, sweet prince. Liverpool may have had greater players, but they will never, never, never have a squarer on.
Yeah. Okay. To the football by Jared. Starting with news today that Harry Kane will be keeping his talents in North London this season. The Spurs striker announced today on his Instagram that he is, quote, staying at Tottenham this summer and will be 100% focused on helping the team achieve success.
I've got a feeling there'll be one or two questions in the discussion. Bang them in so we can keep this short, because I do want to tease this one. This one is, This one, I mean, rarely could you create a epic kind of Scorsese movie out of two words, Dave-o. This summer. I mean, it's just utterly, I can't tell whether it's time for Spurs fans to celebrate the king has returned, or is it more like, oh, the most unexpected old flames to be reunited since David Schwimmer and Jennifer Aniston. And you just don't want to think about those two making out in the same way. I mean, this feels a little bit, the way he wrote it, it's like, oh, back in prison. So what do you think? Pass those words for me, Dave-o, this summer, because it was a very strange, mopey declaration.
Well, it could really mean three things, right? It could mean, or maybe even four things, but three things, really. It could mean this summer and the transfer window. Is it closed at the end of summer? In some, by some means, September, when it closes, will not be summer anymore. So it could be, I'm just focused on this for the next week and a half. It could mean this summer, this transfer window, until we get to the January transfer window. Or it could mean he's talking in the present tense, this summer I've decided this is where I'm going to stay and I'll work on a new contract and it will be longer term or until the end of next year.
I read it more that as him saying, as long as I'm able to wear white, technically, and as long as I'm able to wear, you know, linen and seersucker, then I'm going to play for Spurs. But once you take seersucker off the table, Daniel Levy, once you take away my linens, thought of Harry Kane in linens is quite beautiful. I mean, this summer is just haunting, and it is a cliffhanger. We do not know what he means. I mean, is he hinting, I cannot wait to get out of here in the next transfer window, when notoriously big deals, and we've got to say, the deals now in the upper ether of football, and by upper ether, I mean like the VIP room within the VIP room within the VIP room, which is that club, and only PSG, Chelsea, Manchester City and Manchester United definitely hanging in there are able to operate in that ether. These deals are suddenly 150. You know, you're now an average. I remember when the first player went for a million pound, David, Trevor Francis. Yeah. You remember him?
Yeah, amazing footballer.
A million pounds sounded just $1 million. It sounded like just bank truck after bank truck after bank truck. Like now, you know, if you get, and now obviously £1 million is like what even a League Three team would pay that. I imagine we have got to the first £100 million player in English football, the first English player, Jack Grealish. I imagine within a year or two, we'll our eyes will glaze over with boredom at the notion of £100 million player.
He's just a £100 million player.
Ooh. Yeah, I play for that. You know, that's just three Dogecoin. I mean, I don't quite understand it. It's like the player transfers have just gotten to be like NFTs. It's like something I don't fully understand. And so this is a massive amount of money that they're talking about, £150, $206 million for Harry Kane. I mean, the next transfer window, you immediately, when we had lunch today, pulled up a list of the big transfers that have gone through in the winter transfer window.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you think it's possible?
Yeah, I do think there are a lot. I mean, you know, Diego Costa, Bruno Fernandes, you know.
Alexis Sanchez.
There have been some, you know.
Marouane Fellaini.
Yeah, Fernando Torres. There have been some big ones over time. So it could still happen then. But I think the news today, you know, just breaking that, you know, Pep is going to move on from City at the end of 22-23. Like, who knows? Like, everything seems to be like, you know, changing. I must say, can I just say one more thing, Rog, about that statement? If you pass it, the initial draft was definitely not this summer. The initial draft was, I'm going to be staying at Tottenham and we'll be 100% focused on helping the team achieve success. And then they say, no, Harry, you've got to add something that puts some limitation on it. And so then he says, so staying at Tottenham for now, and we'll be 100% focused on helping the team achieve success. No, Harry, it's got to be something more specific than for now. And so they ended up, I don't think this summer would have been the first choice when they wrote that sentence.
You think? When I read it, I thought Harry Kane wrote, I'm going to stay at Tottenham, it's a bummer. And he spelt it wrong. It was just like, autocorrect. What have you done, autocorrect? I wanted to write, Daniel Levy is a bummer. But it's like, it didn't come out right. We've got the mystery of it. Some are all passing it. So like, how does it work now? This is I've got to say, and I wrote this in my newsletter this morning, my instant reaction. I wrote that
I feel, my first reaction was to feel for this human being, Harry Kane. And yeah, I know a lot of Twitter worries, oh, you feel for a man who's making £300,000 a week. Oh, hot wound. But this emotionally, this kid has been at Tottenham since he was a child. He's one of our own. He's one of our own. He loves the bloody club. He really bloody does. Something breaks inside of him. He has to leave the only home he's ever known and strike out for pastures new. You know, it's a hard emotional decision to make. And then, boom, to find that the person that told you, yeah, Harry, we want you. Harry, we're going to come in for you big time. They didn't, you know, City kind of wanted him. Kind of, you know, if you read reports that they kind of didn't go to the level that was mildly serious, the 150 level. And he's kind of been left high and dry. And I, the emotional confusion, the emotional turmoil, I'm sure a lot of people, I mean, I have on this call thought they got a job, didn't get the job. This is to do that in a place of such high stakes. And how do you feel, Davo? You know, he is a professional. We know that about Harry. He is, you know, Harry's brand, and this is why this has been so awkward to watch. Harry's brand is good brand. He's, you know, he's the good person. He does no harm. This has been a turmoil, a time of tumult for him, having to mildly play the bad guy, mildly flex his muscles, stay on vacation, kind of wrestle for leverage, look pretty bloody awful in the eyes of the faithful who loved him. How do you feel he'll take the field? I know he'll be professional. I know he'll train hard. But emotionally, Dave, Harry Kane, the Dark Knight, I mean, anger goals, no sellies, tattoo sleeves. You don't understand me. Do you see a darkness?
Oof, here's my pie chart, Rog. 60% of me believes that he is just a professional athlete and he is going to do what he's done at every point in his career when he's been doubted before, and he will just go and just start knocking them in for fun again. That's 60% of me. About 30% of me believes that, you know, this will have affected him in some way. And, you know, I'm not sure that the mental effect, but he's just getting older. What he does every season seems to be a miracle. Maybe the miracle doesn't happen this season. Maybe he's just normal, great footballer, Harry Kane, and the goals don't fly in the way they have in the past. And suddenly his value goes down. The big loser in that is Daniel Levy, actually. And I guess the sort of the 10% fear is that it's something just more disastrous. I guess this is the darkness, that he gets injured, or, you know, that it just, something terrible happens that just makes this like a very, that this becomes a sadder story, even sadder story than it is now.
God, you're taking it to a really dark place, I've got to say. I mean, you can go to a middle ground and just say, I mean, it's why I don't fully understand the Daniel Levy position, is that, God, he's 28 now. You have people who want to pay, you know, real coin for a 28-year-old who's on the downside. It's where Arsene Wenger, God love him, was actually very good, mostly in terms of selling elite players just when they were about to go into decline. How much would you get for a 29-year-old, particularly when, you know, there's a lot of big, shiny pieces on the market next season? You've got Haaland and his 90 million release. You've got Mbappe floating around. The Ronaldo, you know, won't someone dance with me? I want to dance with somebody. Nobody suddenly wants this dude who's essentially just a massive Instagram account who's still quite good at football, but not what he was.
And I mean, the issue is how much you've got to pay these guys' agents is quite apart from how much you've got to pay the players.
That's the cruelest bloody part of this, we should say. Harry Kane's agent is?
His brother.
Oh, my God. Charlie Kane. I mean, that is another human dimension of this that I'm sure we'll get to this in the questions. I mean, he's found out that his brother essentially is the Roger Clinton of the Kane family. Actually, worse, is that Charlie Kane, his agent, for whom Harry is his only client, turned out to be like all three Baldwin brothers, Steve and Billy, and the other one rolled into one doll. I mean, that is a darkness. He's got to play football in a place he doesn't want to play. And part of the reason is, God, his brother effed this up so bloody badly. And it's a dodge. Having said that, there are reports breaking as we green room that, you know, Harry Kane has demanded £400,000 a week from from Tottenham say, oh, God, Charlie Kay, don't worry, bro, I got this. I got this for you, bro. I'm not sure he does. Mm. We will probably pick this one up the wazoo. Yeah. I'm seeing a lot of great questions in the discussion chat. We're going to get to these questions and do as many of them as we can because it is absolutely, oh, my Lord, it's kicking off in there. But we should talk about West Ham very quickly, David, because it's gorgeous.
Absolutely. Just to batten a final point, though, Daniel Levy, a lot of people saying today, oh, wow, what a genius. He's only going to be a genius if Harry Kane continues to put the ball in the back of the net. Other than that, he is a massive declining asset. Okay, as you mentioned, a game that took place after Monday's pod was recorded. Only a game that sent David Moyes right where he belongs. Only to the top of the Premier League table. West Ham 4, Leicester City 1. The battle to break out of the Indy charts and into the top four sees the Irons pump 4 goals past 10-man Leicester. The highlight of this one, the Mikel Antonio double, which made him West Ham's highest goal scorer in Premier League history. This actually sounds a lot more impressive than it actually is. It's not that many goals. And saw the same man who once drove a Lamborghini into a bin shed dressed as a snowman celebrate with a cardboard cutout in a torrent of bubbles. All hail the Premier League's most joyous Shakespearean character and footballer.
Oh, we love Mikel Antonio. By the way, quick reminder, ask your questions in the chat where the wonderful Binky Marsh has just said, Arsenal going to win it all. Just needed a bit of Carabao today to get on track. God love Binky, never not deluded. West Ham, though, can we just raise a glass to David Moyes in every single way? 8 goals in 2 wins to start the season, like a clenched fist. I mean, what a wonderful thing. I will say, to watch Mikel Antonio, stealth, dirty dancing aficionado, is to witness joy for life itself. You've got this team, Antonio, Suchek, Declan Rice for now, you know, and Saïd Benarama improving with every game. Possibly, and West Ham fans who are listening, you'll tell me what you think. To me, it's the depth-wise, the strongest West Ham team we've seen in the Premier League era. You got Kurt Zouma coming, bless him, with his one mistake guaranteed per match, maybe match and a half. And I couldn't be happier for David Moyes, Dave. I mean, to have failed after grinding your way to the top of, you know, the top job in football, fail humiliatingly, publicly, and then rebound from the freefall that ensued and reassert yourself. I mean, God, I love it. And I look at him and I'm like, if we have a third of the perseverance and wonder that David Moyes has shown when we fail, because we all do, then my God, I wish that upon everybody in this green room. Godspeed to him. Godspeed to all Hammers fans. I love their success.
Yeah, they're amazing last season, amazing this season, and doing it all without Jesse Lingard, who a lot of people felt that without him, maybe West Ham were going to fall back towards the pack. But so far, I love it. I love it.
Free Jesse Lingard. Let us, Davo. Is it time? Can we gem us up? Don't be shy on the gems. Is it time for us to dive on in and take the questiones?
Yeah, absolute, Roger. Go ahead.
We are going to line them up. We're going to take them on. We're going to unpack it all in this. I mean, this is transfer window, heat of the market. Every dream is still possible. Not you, Harry Kane. We're going to start. Come up on stage. Producer J-Dubs will get you up if you have questions. We're going to start with the great Mason Whittaker. Where are you calling from, Mason? Come on up and what's your question?
Hi, Rog. Hi, Davo. It's an honor to make it onto the stage with both of you. I'm from Portsmouth, New Hampshire.
Oh, interesting.
And my question beautiful. Is, thank you. My question is, how do you think Danny Ings fits into the Villa Frat Boys group?
Oh, it's a big hole to fill with grills. Grills gone. Oh. They're probably a bit down. I imagine they're all just like sitting on beanbags around the broken table, football table, not quite knowing what to do with themselves. In walks Ings. Dave, is he lighting farts? Because he seems to be quite, you know, he's been there, Danny Ings. He's been around the block. He's not that interested in young boys' kind of folly.
Well, I don't think this is going to surprise any of you, but I've already thought quite a lot about this when I was watching Danny Ings play for Villa at the weekend. And I was thinking, how does he fit right in? And you could sort of see he's kind of like the seventh-year senior or the townie, perhaps, within the, you know, I imagine in frat houses around the country, there's a townie who they like, who hangs out down at the local, you know, 7-Eleven or Wawa that they befriend. And he knows how to get things done, knows some of the wrong people in the right places. And I feel like Ings is that guy. He's so much harder than everybody else on that team. He's so much older than everybody else on that team. I think he brings a level of life experience that these young kids who are trying to reeling from losing their leader, Greels, they probably need right now.
Yeah, I imagine him walking in and just they all stare at him. There's a silence and he looks at them and he's like, lads, first things first, new rules. I don't like my farts.
And
they're a little bit down. They're a little bit, he goes, but I do buy underage kids beer. And then they're like, hey! I mean, the way you describe it, David, you've essentially just described McConaughey's part in Dazed and Confused. I don't know how you say
similar.
All right. He probably says in his Birmingham accent. But yeah,
I think
you've been visited by the Peaky Blinders. Brandon Manton in the chat says that he's essentially like Vince Vaughn in Old School. I imagine he's kind of he's kind of ultimately tender. They don't like him at first. He's a bit old. He's a bit menacing. But then when they have a fight against the other frat house, just they're getting the crap beat out of them. And then suddenly Danny Ings walks out into the midst of the fighting, knuckle dusters on, and goes, it's like that, is it, lads? And he just absolutely becomes an instant legend. I will say, watching him score that goal at the weekend gave me so much pleasure. Danny Ings, by the way, has scored bangers like that for Southampton week in, week out. No one gave a crap. And, you know, he's doing what Danny Ings does, just scores absolutely. Danny Ings is... I played darts against Danny Ings in pubs across Liverpool. Danny Ings always fancies himself when he's on the hockey, always bets on himself. And the only thing that's held Danny Ings back, he should be playing for England, is just cruel, cruel injuries, cruel, cruel fitness problems.
And the fact that he's English. Because if he were continental, he'd probably be worth a lot more money.
Danny Ings. I think ultimately he will mould those young. I mean, also his partnership is going to be fascinating with Ollie Norwood. I think it's going to be absolutely
Ollie Watkins.
To watch with old Watkins. Watch that develop. If those two can gel, then you know Villa. God love. They deserve happiness. They deserve joy. Villa fans. It could be the stuff that genuinely dreams are new made of. Danny Ings, the new bass player for Ollie Watkins, and the Deflectors. Mark, come on up, mate. Where are you from? And what's your question?
Hi, guys. Calling from Austin, Texas.
Yes!
Yes!
Yes! How are you all down there? Oh my God!
The road to the USMNT winning World Cup 2022 starts in about a week. How do you think the lack of VAR in CONCACAF World Cup qualifying will affect their winning and their just how they are?
the lack of VAR in CONCACAF.
They got a couple of paper cups and some string like that. That goes into the back of an old VW van in a parking lot somewhere. Who knows? They've got something.
VAR doesn't allow electricity. Electricity has not been invented. CONCACAF does not allow electricity. And by the way, I want to be clear. When we laugh at CONCACAF, I want to be completely 100% clear at this. We are not laughing.
It's not because of the lack of VAR.
We're laughing at CONCACAF. I won't be clear. There was a beautiful gentleman on Twitter who said, "Yeah, you shouldn't laugh at CONCACAF," thinking we were laughing at like the fields in Honduras, the fields in El Salvador, the field. We're not laughing at any of that. That is glorious, joyous football. It's one of the joys of CONCACAF. To be honest, as a reporter and a fan to be able to travel to those incredible footballing cultures. When we're laughing at CONCACAF, we're mostly laughing at the fields they play in the United States. But they'll play games. They'll play the final of the Gold Cup in, like, where was it? Was it in Vegas? On a field that was like, it was like a cricket
of
pitch.
Straw.
Or something. Yeah, it was like, no, they wish it was straw. I mean, by the way, CONCACAF would have looked at the baseball game that was played in the field of corn, and they would have been like, why are you playing on the nice grassy? Why are you playing on the nice grassy bit? Why don't you play in the
play
corn?
In the corn.
Play in the corn. Play in the corn. So CONCACAF is CONCACAF's biggest problem. I wouldn't say, Dave, it's probably not the lack of VAR, is it?
No, it's like no one could bear to even look at the action again. You don't want to watch it again.
I mean, CONCACAF is the Star Wars cantina of global football. And, I read yesterday, it's lovely. Don Garber, who's an incredible hype man ahead of the Great Skills Challenge last night, was talking about Mexico and the US and the rivalry. And he said, soon CONCACAF will be, up there with CONMEBOL. That's the South American conference, and I'm like, I love that idea. We are just light years away. That it's just there's been so much corruption. There's been so much just ill-gotten leadership. I remember as a journalist being when the worst federation president of all time had been locked up and FIFA was burning down. We got invited out for lunch with the new CONCACAF. president who was very charming and kept just referring to just a few bad apples, and that's what had ruined CONCACAF. And there was a New York Times reporter, Matt Futterman, whose birthday it is today, got a beautiful man.
Oh, happy birthday, Matt.
And he said, I've got to tell you, the few bad apples, when you say that in New York, that's what the police, the worst of New York police corruption, that's what the police chief used to say, there's just a few bad apples. And the honest truth is, CONCACAF's problems are not about VAR. It's about the leadership has been allowed to atrophy, has been allowed. And a lot of it was American leadership, with Chuck Blazer realizing that in America, soccer was such a backwater that he could be pulling the strings for America in CONCACAF. And it's honestly a massive, it breaks my heart more than I can tell you to see how badly run CONCACAF has been historically and how so many of these incredible nations are paying the price for a leadership which is corrupt beyond belief. So your question was, will VAR be a problem? I mean, there's so many. When you speak to the American players, they, even the ones that play in the Premier League, their eyes are open wide. And this is a great test for these young American players. Their eyes are open wide when they come back and they play in Honduras and they play before, crowd, a furious, wonderful, passionate crowd on in that culture, in that realm. There's going to be a series of challenges. We're feeling great about the American team right now. If you watch Dora the Explorer, where Dora has to go over the chocolate mountain, through the honey forest, through the valley of whatever the hell Dora goes to, that's what CONCACAF qualification is really about. And they're going to learn. Yes.
Map.
Yes.
Map.
That's what Greg Berhalter.
Swiping.
So that's they're going to learn a lot about each other. They're going to learn a lot about themselves. I'd say VAR is low. The lack of VAR is very low down on that problem. I've gone on, David. Hit a nerve about corruption. I don't know if you've got anything to add. I'm sorry for going off on one.
But no, I'm just saying that the fields aren't even rectangular on the whole, so it's going to be quite different, quite difficult to like align the cameras to make VAR work. there are a lot of issues that have to happen. There will be inexplicable decisions made by referees and officials during the CONCACAF World Cup qualifying Ocho, and I don't think VAR could do anything about how strange these decisions will be. But that's part of. It's CONCACAF-y. It's part of what we have to figure out how to love.
When you say that, it's CONCACAF-y. It's like the last line of Chinatown. It really is. And that is CONCACAF. It's Chinatown, Jake. Yeah. Let's bring up to the stage the enigmatic Shay. Did I pronounce that right? Tell us where you are and what your question is.
Good evening, gentlemen. I'm from Knoxville, Tennessee. And it's Che, but you're close.
Che. Che.
Yes, just Che.
What is that short for anything, or is that the entire name?
That's my name. That's the name my father gave me.
That makes me want to go out and buy another or have another child. I love that name.
What, did you just say regard. Buy another child?
I'm so confused in every regard tonight. Che, what's your question?
So one of the unique qualities in European soccer, which you don't see as much in U.S. sports, is the loyalty players show to the teams they played for in the past, in particular trying to avoid playing for their rivals. So my question is regarding Cristiano Ronaldo. Do you think it's a wise move for his legacy to try to move to Manchester City? And also for Manchester City, is it a good idea to try to get a 36-year-old striker?
That's a leading question, Che.
Can I tell you, when Cristiano thinks about his legacy, he thinks it's basically got something to do with his legs. That's how little the idea of legacy really means to him. And the idea that I think it's rather charming, the idea that Cristiano would even be thinking for a second, having any hesitation about going to Manchester City because he's played for Manchester United.
I don't think he remembers that he wants to play for Manchester United. I mean, by the way, I think Ronaldo's lawyers are listening to this and they're just trademarking legs-gacy. That's going to be a new line of underpants for training. Never skip. Every day is legs-gacy day. I just think it is a ludicrous. Are you a City fan?
No, I'm actually a Chelsea fan just because of Christian Pulisic.
Yeah, God love. Great, great reason. We'll probably talk about Pulisic before this. The green room is done. But I tell you, the whole thing is just so bloody ridiculous. I did like there's a meme of the Carlos Tevez Welcome to Manchester poster, but it's got Ronaldo's head on instead. It's such a ludicrous notion. I mean, Ronaldo is really, at this point in his career, he's not really a footballer. He's an idea. There's an idea of Ronaldo. And the idea is deeply intoxicating. The reality is far more complicated. And we can talk about that if you want. But he's really, more than anything, a massive brand platform. He's an enormous, enormous. I mean, not to be. You see how Messi joined Paris Saint-Germain? And their Instagram followers within 48 hours had increased more, I think by 5 million, more than the biggest NFL Instagram account in total, which I believe is the Dallas Cowboys or the New England Patriots. And so this part of football that has become so ludicrous in this moment that it's actually not about football at this highest, highest level. In this highest level, we're really talking about a handful of teams. It really is PSG, Man City, United, and Chelsea in that realm. There are brand realities and brand platforming and all. You know, I remember when Wayne Rooney re-signed for Everton as an 87-year-old and I couldn't understand why he'd re-signed. And I spoke to the club and they were like, look, that tweet that we put out where Wayne signed a glass window and it looked like he was signing the camera, that performed times 10 more than any other tweet Everton have put out in their club history. And it's done particularly well in China. Like that, these are the kinds of discussions that you have when you think about the idea of a Ronaldo. But from a footballing perspective, Dave, why would City want him?
Well, I mean, he's still a useful footballer. He's not a terrible footballer. And I'm sure, you know, he's another player who would fit in somewhat well with their series of enormously talented footballers that they've got all over the park. I don't think it'd hurt them. As a footballer,
you think about distraction. You think about distraction. I mean, City. I mean, I think the whole story, honestly, is like agent provoked.
Yeah,
because
probably.
You think about City. The one thing they've done is really they do massive psychological checks on all the players that come in. They want good guys in that locker room. They want Gundogans. They want, you know, Bernardos when they're not playing. They're just team first. KDB understands. Against his will that he should have, you know, days off and rotation. I mean, CR7 is the dog that looked in his own reflection in the water and let the bone drop because he fell in love. I think it's folly. I think it's completely manufactured. But I am fascinated. He's almost too big to fail at this point. Like the salary that he's on, the wages he's on, the circus he brings to town. But in this new footballing reality, there's such a small number of clubs that can tolerate him. And understanding the reality of what he brings, which is still goals, but it's deeply tactically, you sacrifice so much by playing a guy that can't track back. The reality, I feel, is caught up with Ronaldo, and he should just go and pick any team in the French league. Just pick some random team that's totally crap, just so we can watch him play against Messi over and over and over. It'll be Ligue 1's where it's at, Davo. I've got to bring this gentleman up because I've got to tell you, when he emailed me last week and he did me such a solid, I thought his name was some kind of spoof. And I do apologise. This has been Roger offending Americans over and over again on this green room with their names. But I want to bring up to the stage the great Stroman Breeding, one of the greatest American names of all time. Stroman!
Hey, Roger. Hey, Davo. How are you guys doing?
Stroman, you're a great American. Do you know, Davo, who introduced me to Oxford Pennants?
Stroman Breeding.
It was you, Stroman.
You said it on the pod.
Where are you, Stroman Breeding, you beautiful human being?
I'm in Athens, Ohio now at grad school, but I'm still a toffee, so...
Oh, God bless. I adore Stroman Breeding, but what was your Buffalo connection? How did we even know about the great Oxford Pennants in the first place?
It's funny. I'm getting a master's essentially studying black history and black politics. And I saw a W.E.B. Du Bois quote that they sell, a camp flag, one of his quotes about liberty for all men. And I got hooked on their website and I can't stop buying stuff. It's going to drive me into.
You and me both, Stroman Breeding. You are a beautiful human being. I owe you a huge debt of thanks. Thank you, thank you, thank you for taking the time to wise me up to the true jewels of Buffalo. It's great to have you on and be able to thank you.
Thank you, Roger. I have a question if you guys would answer.
God love, that's the nicest way to say, shut up, Rog. Let's get on with the pod.
I want to ask both of you, because I think Davo will know too, what it's like to get your best winger sold into a bigger, I wouldn't say a bigger club, but a club in financial ruin. What do we do? What does Everton do if God forbid, Richarlison leaves and goes and replaces this whole Mbappe saga? How do we recover like Chelsea when they lost?
When you say if God forbid Richarlison leaves, Richarlison will leave. He's a very good footballer and plays very well for Everton, but he is, when it comes down to it, like a lot of Brazilian footballers, he is going to go and, you know, play for the team that pay him the most. And the only reason he won't leave is if somehow he stops scoring goals and he's not valuable anymore and can't go anywhere else. So he probably will leave. Isn't that the way to look at this, Rod?
The we're all going to die. Is that what you're saying?
Well, no, we're not going to die if Richarlison leaves. You know,
I have more faith in Everton than you. You just said, ultimately, we're all our time is finite. It's what we make of it while we have it, right?
Well, yeah, and it's all a simulation. But, you know, he will be replaced. Somebody else will come along. I often feel I'm high. Let's just not forget my partner in pod and life, Roger Bennett, predicted that Everton would be relegated at the end of this season in our pre-season pod. And they've started quite nicely. I'm not saying they're the champions of August, but they're not out of it yet, Roger. They're looking very good. I think that Everton will survive beyond Richarlison. They're not a one-man team by any means.
I mean, I love Richarlison, Stroman, because he doesn't seem that interested in football. He seems more interested in fighting. We all had a kid in our class when we were growing up who just loved, didn't win all the fights either, but just loved either beating someone up or being beaten up. And Richarlison, watching him play, you can just see he's like on one. He's just constantly on one. He just constantly is, you know, flinging himself to the floor in agony or leaving a boot in or just like, it's just like, there's just some, he's just an inner conversation, an inner turmoil going on in his head. I adore him. I adore watching him. He's like a hilarious cartoon character that just brings, I mean, he's itchy and scratchy, if we're being honest, in one human being. But I love cash coming into Everton Football Club. I'd like to persuade myself that we're building. I'm not sure what we're building towards. And I do, even like Dom, I don't like to talk about this publicly, but it's just you and me, Stroman. Even Dom, I believe, you know, if you love someone, set them free. I can hear the sound of the bank trucks coming from over the hill with 90 million, and they'll take Don off to to another reality. And I enjoy them while we have them. I enjoy them all, though. That's the joy of being an Everton fan, Strowman. I enjoy the great players. I enjoy particularly the crap ones. I adore when Tom Davis gets a run out in the Hibbo mould. I've got to say, man, we are Andros Townsend's club now, Strowman breeding. We are Andros. I just can't believe like how crap we've become, but how wonderful. I mean, he's won even Wobes. Is scoring goals. So the short answer is, and Strowman, I do want to hear how you are braced for it in a way of agony, but I just try and enjoy each of them while we have them. And the ones that replace them, even the terrible ones. I mean, even Theo, I used to find hilarious in an agonizing way. But I try and enjoy, you know, Wobes falling over. The one time out of three, Wobes will do something unbelievable, just blistering, just mind-bending. Two times out of three, he will just trip over the ball as if he's like a puppy that's never seen one before. I try and enjoy all of it, both the two that fail, the one that succeeds. Do you see a darkness if Richarlison leaves? Because I think the darkness has already descended, and I'm just trying to enjoy the crevice of light.
I think the darkness is that we are Fabian Delph.
Strowman, you've nailed it. You have absolutely nailed it. Oh, my God. Fabian Delph, anti-vaxxer Fabian Delph. Just everything about him is just, yes. You pick the one player that when he does come on, that brings me no joy. Thank you. Thank you, thank you. Strowman, email us anytime. Be in touch with anything. I owe you big time, big man. I'm incredibly grateful. Joy to speak to you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Andrew O'Connor in the chat, Dave. Great question. Better crypto investment, gems on Green Room or site credits?
Oh, don't start messing with my site credits.
Oh, mate. Caroline Walters, where are you? And what's your question?
Hey, Raj. Hey, Dave. I'm in Crozet, Virginia. Sorry, I've been laughing at you guys the whole time. and my question, actually, we're going to stay on the Everton thing. Has Rafael Benitez won over the fans?
Oh.
God, that's a great question, Caroline Walters. God bless you. It was crazy, Dave. One 10-man at Huddersfield win in the Carabao Cup. And while he was being interviewed by it's not Sky who cover the Carabao. I think it is like some public access channel in England that cover the Carabao. But whoever was filming him, there were Everton fans in the background being like, there's only one Rafa Benitez. They love him. They love him already, apparently. What do you make of it? Can we have an objective analysis? And then I'll give you my completely mushy, slightly deranged take, Caroline Walters.
I think he's had a great start, is what I would say. What do you think, Caroline? I think he's been good, and I think he's a good manager, and I think he'll do a good job at Everton. Andros Townsend scored today. Everything's going to be fine.
I think he's a good manager. I'm just not sure about the Everton fans. They could get mean if he doesn't keep winning.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a completely and utterly insane pick. There's no doubt he's a good manager. There's no doubt he's an able human being, but he's that guy. Why would you pick that guy? The other good managers are available. Why you would pick that? You know, it's essentially, it's an incredible risk because I think ultimately, football is a deeply emotional experience. It's not non-rational. And yes, when you win a couple of games, and I think the game against Brighton this weekend is going to be utterly fascinating. I mean, playing against Graham Potter and his beard. Bearded Graham Potter is just a swaggering man. Bearded Graham Potter does not lose games. Bearded Graham Potter is a complete utter baller. I think it's going to be truly fascinating. And I think like emotionally, because football is emotional, you win a couple and you shout out when you've had a couple of beers, you've got some skins in you. You're like, we love you, Rafa. We love you, mate. I think the downs are going to be so much more violent, so much more unforgiving, so much more utterly savage. And that's what I fear, Caroline Walters, is like, I think he'll be given a very short leash by by the Everton fans. And that, so let, football is a game of ups and downs, and I fear the downs are going to be truly, truly dark with the Everton fan base for Rafa Benitez, David.
Huh, interesting. What happened to Moise Keane today? I can't believe he's back. He's back from PSG where he was scoring goals for fun. He goes out against Huddersfield today and he gets sent off.
He raised a hand right in front of the referee in the way only that someone who's like, I do not give two craps. I could not care to be here. By the way, he did score an amazing goal. And by the way, going back to the VAR question in CONCACAF, it was onside. There was no VAR. I mean, he popped back just to get the Hey Chino Everton Italiano song going again. And then he just kind of flicked a switch, didn't give a crap. And got himself sent off. It was less a red card, more I do not want to be here. I do want to get out of here. This is not going to work well for you or for me, so deal me. And I feel for him. You know, he's a young kid. He's arrived at Everton. He had a series of run-ins with managers and then had to sweat out a huge amount of COVID in a strange land away from his family. Obviously enjoyed PSG and didn't do badly there. Believes he should be leading the line at PSG. Instead, is trotting around the Carabao Cup in an Everton shirt. And I feel for him, and I love him. I really love him. I've really wanted an Everton player to do better for the club. But even I'm like, you know, for his sake, God bless it. A fresh start is probably needed. Andrew Millington, come and join us, love. Where are you? What's your question?
Hey guys, Evertonian from Corpus Christi here. Let's talk about the real issues. What are the best and worst kits of this year? Like, big fan of Everton's third kit. I'm actually wearing the Besashed away kit right now.
Yes.
We've got the, you know, Spurs Vincent van Gogh kit, which I'm not a huge fan of. And then, you know, like last year we had the Manchester United. Like, you can't convince me that wasn't recycled Zubaz. That third kit. Like, what are the best and worst of this?
Well, I think we've already called out one. We called out at the weekend. It's watching Manchester United playing the blue and yellow. That was a really. Is that their second kit? Is it their third kit? We don't even know what number that is. But that was a very. That was very strange for me.
Which one?
The blue and yellow kit that Man United played in.
This
last weekend.
Yeah, I mean, that was a weird one. The Spurs space kit is like, I think it's like a litmus test of when you see it. Like, I do believe, I think the Spurs space kit is great if you're for TikTokers. And I imagine if you're very active on Facebook in that demographic, it is utterly less so. And I've got a feeling, you know, they went spacey as a way of like paying tribute to Gareth Bale and his love of aliens. And it's probably the real reason that Harry Kane wants away. He didn't do his research. But I do love the Everton sash kit that you are wearing. And not just because you are wearing it right now, Andrew Millington. I really adore it. And so that, to me, I love a sash. Ever since I've seen Peru 1978 in the World Cup, I don't know why more teams do not wear more. I love the US shirt when they wore a sash. I mean, God, there's almost a desperate in our attention economy in the need now, and I'm fascinated. There's more intelligent people than me that understand ultimately the football shirts have to play really bloody well. On television, where they have to look clean, utterly clean from a distance, so they really pop in five, whatever. But they also need to play unbelievably well on social media in tiny, tiny boxes, and they need to do huge numbers on Twitter. They need to do huge numbers on Instagram. When they're released, they need to do huge numbers on TikTok, and you're almost trying to do a design for three different purposes. You're trying to do a design for high performance athletics, a design for high performance broadcast television, and a design for kind of youth culture driven social media. And hence you get, you get a jersey like the Spurs space kit. And I think more and more
the jerseys, and the US international jersey is really the bellwether of that. It's a jersey that they're just like, there's no real identity. They're just trying to splooge it out for the kids. And more and more jerseys will look like training kits, and there'll be a backlash to that. And I do look forward to that backlash when there's like a deeper kind of a return to just the simplicity and the clean identities of some of these football teams, which are truly joyous.
We haven't spoken yet, Rog, also about that Man City third kit and those, you know, where it says the, where it's taken out the crest and put just the name of the club, but smaller than the name of the sponsor, which is, that's somewhat galling to me as well.
Oh, mate, that is truly, truly bonkers. That's a fourth dimension of jersey design where essentially to try and outperform the counterfeiters, they try to create a jersey that is uncounterfeitable, because if you look at it, it's like a, you know, what, a very modern banknote where there's very complicated watermarking in the shirt. And so they tried to create something. They took the crest off the jersey and embedded the crest, hundreds of them, in the actual fabric, saying, sod it to you counterfeiters in the Far East. And in doing so, the counterfeiters kind of won, because no one would want to wear the bloody shirt anyway. And at that incredible moment this week, I'm sure you all saw it, it's on our Instagram, when a, because they also made this, I hate this when a manufacturer forces every club to wear the template of their one jersey design. Puma made all of their clubs have this as their third kit. There's that magnificent video of the Fenerbahce striker scoring a goal, looking for the badge to kiss, and then looking totally bemused as he couldn't even find a badge on that jersey to kiss, which is genuinely, genuinely magnificent. Couple more questions before we call it a night. What a day it's been. What a day of joy and awe and wonder. Let's have, I recognize this name, a longtime GFOP, longtime wonderful human being. Come on up and join us. Oh, it's Carson Monson. Where are you? What's your question?
Great to connect, guys. Calling from right next to Rio Tinto Stadium in Salt Lake City.
Woo!
Oh.
Woo!
So, thank you guys for inviting me on. Question I had, I'm a longtime Spurs fan, longtime listener of the pod. How do you think Kane begrudgingly deciding to stay affects Son's ability to move into the limelight and be the face of Spurs?
Great, great. Are you a Spurs fan, Carson?
Die hard.
So how have you lived this? How have you lived this, this kind of theatrical twist and turn and arc? And how, are you a happy man tonight?
It's bittersweet, if I'm being honest. It was, you know, obviously, like, you can't argue with the leading goal scorer and the leading assists man in the Premier League last year, but it's put a little bit of a sour taste in my mouth. And, you know, as I look at that first game against City and you see the fans get behind Son and Son step into the limelight, like, I really kind of reveled in that. And now this dynamic is kind of put in a weird position where it's like everybody knows Kane wants to leave, but he's staying, and now Son kind of has to move back into that second fiddle position in some regards, and I'm not sure how to feel about it.
David,
I feel like we're speaking so much about Tottenham. We have today between Harry Kane, and now I think this very legitimate and great question about, you know, about how this is going to affect Heung-min Son. And I love your honesty with just accepting. And sometimes there are things when we look at our clubs that feel bad, but I feel like we're doing all this, you know, analysis of Tottenham. We're not really getting to the core issue, which is Nuno's bomber jacket. That really seems to me what has won the season so far. I don't think there's really, for me, until we've dealt fairly and squarely with Nuno's bomber jacket, which has won the season. For me, that's the champion of August, maybe even deserves a Premier League trophy already. I don't know that it's worth really going on to any of the other football-related matters.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough, tough one. And Spurs fans are no doubt rolling their eyes at every article, which they seem to be written almost every year about how, you know, Son's win percentage without Kane is actually much better than Spurs' percentage when the two of them play. And, you know, I joked in my newsletter this morning that Harry Kane's decided to stay at the Heung-min Son Club. and
I found Sonny's art quite fascinating. You know, there was a game at the end of last season where Sonny walked off the field crying. And it was dark in that moment. And a good mate of mine who's a Spurs fan, Scott Debson, texted me immediately and was like, oh, we've seen that before. You know, a number of times Spurs fans have seen like a player they love, you know, in tears at the end of a game. And it's like a sign that he's, you know, he's off. It's like an early sense. Sonny's arc has been in the shadow of Kane's arc. But he had a dark time under Mourinho, a time of great challenge. And I keep thinking about this, about the Kane issue and whether Dan Levy won or Kane, you know, blinked or Man City. The reality is, you know, Spurs are a remarkable football club. I think that just I don't know if I've said this publicly before, but I've got a feeling if I lived in London, I'd be a Tottenham fan. If I grew up in London, they're just a joyous, they're an entertaining, they're a buccaneering club. And they seem to value entertainment when we were kids, you know, the way you play rather than the outcome, the ultimate winning, which I adore in every regard. And I'd say that I adore them, but I think they are traumatized by the Bale, the Magnificent Seven who came in post-Bale, and they got a lot of money and it was all meant to move them to the next level. And instead, you know, the story, they spunked it on, you know, six deeply challenging careers at Tottenham and Christian Eriksen. And it's almost like they were traumatized by their own experience of swapping great talent for great wealth and then reinvesting. And because of reinvestment, crap the bed last time. I would honestly, you know, I look at the core of Spurs and I think, what could 150, 160, you know, 170, if Dan Levy got his own, what could 170 million have done for that squad across the board? And it's almost like part of me feels I would have preferred that. I really would. I'd look at Kane as a wonderful man. I look at him as giving me, as if I was a Spurs fan, so many great memories. I also look at him as a, you know, an aging player, and to get that kind of money for him, even if it was lesser, 130, I would have, I mean, going back to the Everton question, I'd bite your arm off for, you know, 90, 100 million for Dominic Calvert-Lewin, you know, whatever Rich Arlison's worth. The reinvestment that the clubs need to move to that next level. So I do wonder, Dan Levy may have won the battle. I do wonder whether he's, and it became a battle of wills, and it became a battle of vanity. There's lots of, you know, people who have been briefed inside of Spurs, journalists who are saying, Dan Levy started to realise that the more he did a hard line, the more Spurs fans liked him, you know, for the first time in a long time. And so he kept that hard line. And I wonder, long term, how this will play out, whether keeping Kane and not taking the money and not believing in your scouting system and your recruitment system, that ultimately Spurs development will be hindered. But we will see. Last question of the night from the great Double B. Come on up to the stage. Ben Bannister, where are you? What's your question? Benny Bannister. Papa, can you hear me? Ben, can you take yourself off mute? Because you look very handsome. You almost look like you could be the next manager of Wolves from your icon. Come and join us. J-Dubs, do we know what Ben Bannister's question was? Oh, yes, you do, you beautiful human being. We've got a little stick right at the Ben Bannister moment of glory. Ben Bannister was whacked out of the app, but he asked a beautiful question, which I've got half of it here. It's about the best way. Oh, this is a beautiful question. What a way to end. David, what's the best way to pass along a love, a deeply felt love, a deeply, you know, where football is deeply meaningful? What's the simplest, cleanest way to pass that deep love along to your kids? Thank you, Ben Bannister, you beautiful human being.
Yeah, I've got 2 out of 4 of my kids like love watching football with me. One of my daughters and my only son. And I think it's because they have just watched me watching it again and again and again and again. I don't think I ever told them that they had to love Chelsea and love England, but they and that their side chick is Crystal Palace, but they seem to have just sort of taken that on. I think by doing, you know, kids will follow your actions. They'll follow, you know, what you are. I think your kids have done the same thing, Rog, although I don't think you've had to order them to support Everton. I think they followed you in that.
Yeah, there was a moment of a bit of darkness, Ben Bannister. I'm going to talk to you as if you're still with us on the stage, Ben, because it's a beautiful question. When my youngest, Oz, was 5, he had to do one of those fill-in things where the kids had just learned to write and they had to answer a question. And then, you know, you go into the kids' classroom and they have all like 30 answers on the back of the wall. And it's like, and the question was, my daddy is, and my dad's job is to, and like everyone had things like, you know, my dad's job is he's a journalist. My dad's job is he's a lawyer. He fights for justice. My dad's job is, you know, he's an equity investor. He bleeds companies for profit, whatever the kids wrote in their childish handwriting. And my son had written, I'm not trying to be funny, my dad's job is to shout at the television. And I was like, that was pretty haunting. I realized when I watched Everton Football Club, I do, like, everyone's like, I'd love to watch a game with you. It's fairly awful watching an Everton football game with me. I do scream, yeah, at the true television. I do believe I can control the outcome of events 3,500 miles away simply by screaming at my television or moving seats at halftime if we're 4 goals down, whatever. And that, reading that, Ben Bannister, was like a step towards me thinking about how to pass along a true love of the game. And rather than shout the television, I do try and rein it in. And mostly, Ben Bannister, and I'll say this with joy, I've really worked hard in the past 5 or 6 years in particular. And it's really what America allows us to do, I think, to have a football fandom that's based on love and not hate, on enjoying as much as possible and enjoying other teams too, really trying to admire the best of other teams. And enjoy football fandom based on human wonder as opposed to, you know, putting other people down. And so that is what I try and work hard at. David, I've learned a lot from your line about how you're not a better person when you win. You're not a worse person when you lose. And I'm more than anything,
absolutely.
You know, I try and take that nourishment out of the game, Ben, and inculcate it in my kids. And it seems to be working. And by the way,
beautiful,
Ben,
Rog,
having them play, they learn and making them realize they learn lessons about life by playing that transcend off the field what they, you know, winning and losing on it. Those would be my feelings. That is, the clock has struck 8, Dave. We have got this, the beers will not drink themselves, and I've got to go and grab them. And I know you do too. So take us home. How are we wrapping this beauty up?
Okay, well, that is it for this Spotify Green Room, but we're going to be back on Spotify Green Room every Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern time throughout the season. So download the app, search Men in Blazers, give us a follow, turn those notifications on so that you never miss one of these beautiful gatherings. Before we sign off today, Rog, can we get a second toast?
I want to raise the shot of Jägermeister, the official shot of the pod, and a bolt of human emotion in the glass. I want to raise it to Arsenal fans, Davo, because I am filled with love for your play right now. Been there, done that as an Everton fan, you know, in terms of falling from grace, of falling and not being able to get back up again. I raise this Jägermeister to you, to your future joy, and to better days ahead. Courage.
Beautiful. Rog Vanderpunt.
War pig.
Was that a Rabona?
I like snacks.
Balls win.
Take that, Gloria.
Balls loose.
It's a tweed.
Abrigado, rock on, mate.
Kung Fu Fine America. Love you, Dave.
Love you, Rog.
Love you, Strowman breeding. Not you, Charlie Kane.
Hey, Prime members. You can listen to Men in Blazers ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
If you travel for work, you know to pack 2 suits, business and swim. You know with your Delta SkyMiles Business Amex card, buying that plane ticket for a business trip can get you closer to medallion status. You know that a meeting in Montana means visiting almost every national park.
Yellowstone? Check. because you're the chief excursion officer. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum Business American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you know business.